You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I have a special announcement. The radio station will be closed for the next 2 weeks, so this will be my last broadcast until June. I believe it'll be open again June 2nd, which is a Monday, and I would like to congratulate all the students that graduated, and finals are over today, so a lot of people can catch up on their rest. Hopefully you got all those last-minute papers and projects in, and your teachers are now busy grading them because they have a deadline, too, to get those grades in. Congratulations to the students, and once the faculty grades the papers, I'm sure they're ready for at least a short rest because the summer session starts June 5th. We're actually starting the May semester, which is sort of like a super cram course, starting Monday. It's a two-week course that they cram a whole course in the 2 weeks. And I need to comment about something. When I first came to Richland College many, many years ago, really to take a programming course that got me interested in really web design and web development or programming, most of the courses, the semester courses, were 16-week courses. The summer courses were 10 weeks, if my memory serves me. Today, if you enrolled at Richland College in the summer, virtually all, not all, but virtually all the courses that Richland College offers students are 5 weeks in length. They have summer one and summer two. Now, I can see there's a certain need for short courses. There are people that would like to get a course out of the way. They can devote 5 solid weeks to reading, writing, and attending lectures, and in 5 weeks, complete a course. I don't recommend it. Now, I have tried it with online courses, and mainly for courses that I was totally familiar with the material and wanted a brief review, and 5 weeks was fine. But for most people that are new to a subject, I maintain you're better advised to take a full semester course of 16 weeks. Because I can remember taking a few summer courses when it was 10 weeks, and that's shortening it by over a third. And the reason I don't recommend taking a 5-week course, there's simply no way you're going to retain that information. It is truly a cram course, and I think it's somewhat scandalous on the part of the administration, where I would say 95% of the courses offered in the summer are 5 weeks in length. Come on. I would think the faculty and administration knows students aren't going to retain that information. It's a joke, folks. It is simply a cram course, and I recommend that they get back to at least 10 weeks or 12 weeks as opposed to 16 for the summer. I have on occasion taken summer courses. I don't do it unless I really have a need to do it. I definitely don't recommend the 5-week courses. I've tried it, and it was a mistake on my part on a number of levels, but big time, because you really don't retain anything. You're really moving through a textbook at warp speed, if you will. And as a result, it doesn't really get into long-term memory. Yeah, for the 5 weeks you're taking it, you might be up on the subject. But I dare to say a year later, you know virtually nothing. And I can say that for at least several of the short-term courses. Now, what got me upset and why I'm talking about this, I was looking for one course. And I did find one, believe it or not. But most, and I say most, 95% is a low number. I think it's more like 99%. And I was shocked. I would have suspected maybe half and half. But when you only have a handful of courses that are 10 weeks long, and I don't think 10 weeks is adequate either. I believe at one time it was 12 weeks. Usually summer semesters are a little bit shorter. They're not the regular 16 weeks. I remember once when I was doing undergraduate work, I took a calculus course in the summer. And if my memory serves me correctly, and I could be wrong, I forget how many weeks, but it was at least 12. And the other thing is, and this even adds insult to injury, and students know this, during the summer, for example, the multimedia labs are closed on Saturday and Sundays, and your Del Rio labs are closed on Sundays. So you have less time with the lab being open for business, yet fewer weeks to learn the material. I think that's irrational. I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to save money, but at the expense of education. And I really think the administration and faculty needs to really rethink what they're doing to the students. You need some adult supervision here, and I don't see it. It's really trying to make it convenient and rake in the money. And you can suck in the students that way, but they're not going to get an education. It's a cram course. And I'm not against cram courses, for example. I have a number of certifications. And usually, before you take a test, you have a number of outfits that will offer a cram course in preparation for an exam. It's not a course. It's a preparation for the exam, and it assumes you've already done the reading and know the material. It's just to prepare you for a test. That is what I see as a cram course, and that has a certain usefulness because people are signing up for those types of courses. But when you're turning a college education, and these are the freshman and sophomore courses, these are fundamental courses, and to try to condense them to 5 weeks, I think you've lost sight of your mission. I thought it was for the students to get educated. They're not going to remember a thing, virtually nothing, because they go through so much material in such a short period of time. And I've seen what passes for summer education here. And it's not something to blow your bugle on, because it was really a disappointment. The only exception to that, there are some practical courses. And when I mean practical courses, for example, Photoshop. Last summer, I took a Photoshop course because I hadn't had one in over 12 years. There have been at least a half a dozen new versions, but I was familiar with the material. I really needed to see what the new additions were to Photoshop. And surprisingly, I'd say about half the people in that class, that's why they were taking it. They need a refresher on the latest version. Now, some were new to it, but that was a 10-week course. And I think that was far too short. Far too short. I think they should go back to 12 weeks, and the labs, the computer labs, should be open, both multimedia and Del Rio. Now, that's my complaint of the day, but I think it deserves attention by the president and the administration, as well as the new chancellor at the DCCD. I think there needs to be some rethinking done. Now, I know some of the students prefer the short courses, and obviously they wouldn't be offering 5-week courses if they're not making. But that doesn't mean you give the students what they want if what they want really doesn't get them educated. It does get a requirement out of the way. I think it's far better to take one, at most two courses in a 12-week semester, and that is shortened. That's 25%. Less time than the regular 16 semester. Now, why do I emphasize that? It just takes time to get information into your head and into your long-term memory. You need to digest it. You need to think about it. And that's the problem. You don't have time to think about it. You really don't. And you really don't have time to master the material. And I said on a couple of shows ago, I've heard complaints. from students that a lot of the courses and it's district-wide are dumbing down, and I can vouch for that. I'm shocked at the quality of the courses that are being offered at Richland, and Richland is sort of the crown jewel of the DCCD system, and it's one of the best community colleges in Texas. I'm not saying the United States, although we did win the Baldrige Award, but I'm not impressed with awards. I'm impressed with the quality of instruction, and I'm simply not. My best instructors by far have been those that come from industry. It's not the full-time faculty. It's not. The few outstanding instructors I have were all adjunct faculty that had a other full-time job, and really the reason they were teaching was not even for the money. It was for the, call it psychic income, of passing on knowledge, transferring knowledge and their expertise and experience to students. And what's very, very disappointing, because I've taken a lot of programming courses as well as web design courses at Richland College. And I can say the best instructors have been from industry. And the same thing with multimedia. They've been from industry. And I'm not being critical of the full-time faculty here. I'm just saying, if you really want to learn a subject, learn from someone that's doing it daily. You see, I used to teach at the University of Texas at Dallas many, many years ago, in the 80s, mid-80s. I had a full-time job. But I enjoy teaching, and I was teaching the financial economics course there that goes into financial institutions, money and banking, and the various types of financial institutions, such as commercial banks, investment banks, insurance companies, and also the various types of securities. I taught it, I think, a total of 4 or 5 times, and then I decided enough's enough for a couple of reasons. Even though I was in the financial services industry and have my education, obviously, is in economics, but also as a result of getting a number of certifications and my practical experience, I could give students information that you can't learn in a textbook, nor can you learn from a full-time faculty that, in essence, just lectures on whatever course they're assigned, and they don't have any comparable real world experience. So the best faculty I have had here are adjunct faculty from industry. And I encourage students to check out the faculty. Check out who's teaching the course. Now, I know what some students do. They're looking for the easiest teachers. And there is a grapevine, and people know who they are, and they seek them out. It's the easy A. In other words, I can get an A without, in some cases, even opening a book. And you might say, you're kidding. No, I'm not kidding. I can think in one in particular. I'm not going to go after the guilty party. But to say I was disappointed would be putting it mildly. And what I got out of the course is what I put in. Now, that's usually the case anyway. So if you're going to register for summer courses, think about it. Now, I will say this, if you're considering a science course, maybe even a math course, but definitely a science course, don't do it in the summer. Do it in the fall or spring when you have 16 weeks. I know how tempting it is. In 5 weeks, I can get out of the way the required course that I got to take and I really don't want to take. It'll be painful for 5 weeks, but then it'll be over. Yeah, it'll be over. You've spent your money, you spent your time, you learn very little because there's no way you can retain it. Because you need to think about the material. If you don't think about it, before you know it, you will retain, I won't say nothing, but very little. Now, you need to register because, and I'm giving this as more as a public service announcement, you need to register prior to the first day of the course. And I believe, if my memory serves me, it is June 5th for the summer one, as well as the few courses, like you can put on one hand, count on one hand, that are 10 weeks. So you need to get on the ball because you really have less than 3 weeks to do that. I think you have exactly 20 days before June 5th is arriving, which I believe is a Thursday. So for those that are not going to summer school or summer semester, I hope you enjoy your vacation. And for those seeking employment, I wish you luck because you will need it. And that is a perfect segue into what I'm going to be talking about today and really finishing up a two-parter on immigration, in particular illegal immigration, which is in the news today. If you ask the American people, and they have been asked repeatedly in polls, what are their top three, four, or five concerns? What's number one and two? What would you think is number one and two? I want you to think about it, and you tell me, or you tell yourself, what do you think I'm going to say next in terms of the top one or two concerns? And it has to do with economics. One is the job situation. People are very concerned about keeping their job as well as finding jobs. And a close second, and sometimes they reverse order, is the economy. That's another way to say jobs. And that's by far the number one concern, even if they have a job, is whether or not they're going to keep it. That jobs, 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 jobs. That is what the American people are concerned about, keeping them, finding them, and getting a better job. Because more and more jobs today are part-time, and people are having to have two or three jobs. This is by far the worst economic recovery since World War II. And it's second only to the poor recovery and really the Depression, the Great Depression of the 1930s. The economic situation, it's not bad, but it's certainly not good. And the two measures of that are how fast the economy is growing, but more importantly, can people find jobs? We have had an unemployment rate above 6% every single day President Obama has been in office, and many months when George Bush was in office. And we are still not, we're still not at the previous peak in employment that happened in November of 2007, when 146.6 million people were employed. That's the highest level of employment that the United States has ever had. And come November, we're celebrating the seventh anniversary of that, and we still have not gotten back to that level of employment. That's how bad it is. Now, Barack Obama likes to go on and on and on about how many jobs he's created. Well, Mr. President, you've created virtually none, because jobs are created by businesses in the private sector. That's where jobs are created. In the private sector, primarily by small new businesses with five employees or less. It is not that the large companies don't employ a lot of people. They most definitely do. But they're not the net job creators. The new jobs that are created are in the private sector, primarily by small businesses. And that's why I say if you're looking for a job, for example, over the summer or permanently, go to small businesses, knock on doors. That's the way to find a job. There'll be new businesses. The best way to find a job is word of mouth. Not answering a want ad, although you should. Or not going to monster.com or LinkedIn or whatever. It's really keep your eyes open, not only for the wanted sign, but to see if there's, introduce yourself, briefly tell them what your skill sets are, if you have any, and you might get an offer. So that's what I recommend young people, especially people that are new to the job market, do. But if a friend, a relative, or someone knows of a job, tells you about it, pursue it. I've gotten several jobs that way. I wasn't looking for a job, but people said, you know, they're interested in someone with your background. Why don't you check it out? Well, I did, and I've gotten jobs that way. It's networking. It's more than social networking. It's networking. So you need to apply it, and that's why I'm talking about it. Jobs is the number one problem facing Americans. It's not getting any it's getting marginally better very, very slowly. See, by now, June, next month, will mark the fifth year, that's 60 months since we got out of the recession. The recession ended in June of 2009. And usually recover, now you get a fairly wide variability here, but you usually have another recession sometime 5 to 7 years. Your typical recovery lasts 5 to 7 years. Now, given this is so abysmally poor recovery, and there's several reasons for it, and I'll get into that, but I will link it to the previous show because I need to wrap that up and I don't have much time. The reason the unemployment rate has been so high is Washington, D.C. The federal government is generating uncertainty. Business owners, and some of it has gone away, but for the worst. One uncertainty area is taxes. I have no idea what the current tax code will be 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. And the rates have been going up, up, and up, and that is not conducive for businesses to make investments. So Washington is a big part, I would say the major problem. It is a combination of high taxes compared to other nations, high tax rates, and then also more and more regulation. Now, why those two are very important, and I could have a show dedicated to each one, that's not the primary problem. The primary problem is that the federal government continues to spend more money every year than they collect in taxes. I was double checking just to see what the deficit will probably be by the end of the fiscal year, come September of this year. It is running a little above $300 billion deficit. In other words, they're spending more than $300 billion, and that is through April. Now, April, they usually get, because that's the month people send their tax money in, they get a lot of receipts. I strongly suspect that the deficit this year will be $500 billion or more, somewhere between $500 and $600 billion. Now, that's better. That's an improvement. So we are making some progress as the economy slowly recovers. The problem is there's no sense of urgency upon either the Democratic Party's part or the Republican Party's part to balance the budget. And that requires cuts in spending, both discretionary spending and mandatory spending on both welfare programs and entitlement programs. There's no sense of urgency. And there should be, because you literally cannot sustain this. Throughout history, and there have been dozens of cases, what happens? Especially of a major power doing this. Eventually, they default on the debts, in this case, the Treasury securities. Now, very large nations, no, they still pay it off by issuing more debt. But what happens is the money the bondholders or creditors of the government get back is worth significantly less in terms of the purchasing power of that dollar. And that's another way to default. What you thought you were going to get back in terms of principal interest turns out to be worth a lot less because the value of the dollar or whatever currency is worth a lot less. And that's a result of inflation. So we have a government, a federal government, that truly is out of control. It's living way beyond the means of the American people. And that invariably means price increases. Have you gone to the grocery store lately? Yesterday, I went to the grocery store, had to do some shopping. And on my way, I noticed that the gasoline prices are now at $3.50. They actually spiked up for a couple of days to $3.70, then went down to $3.35. They've been very volatile, and now they're back up to $3.50. Remember, you hear, well, they're switching over from the winter blend to the summer blend, but once the refineries have completely switched over, the prices will go back. Yeah, they've gone back up. And it's not because people are taking a lot of vacations. Ladies and gentlemen, commodities, in particular oil and gas or petroleum, have become, well, the problem is this, it's excessive speculation. I don't have time to get into it. I'm looking at the clock. But that's why your prices are the price of gasoline is going up and down, up and down, up and down. It's no longer the way it used to be, where speculators, and I'm for speculation, but I'm against the deregulation of that market. That today means that most of the contracts sold, future contracts sold, both for agricultural commodities but also petroleum, gasoline, are strictly, it's a casino, folks. People are gambling or betting on what the future price of either gasoline or petroleum is going to be. It's not based on supply and demand in terms of the people that produce it and the people that consume a commodity. At one time, at least 70% of the contracts had to be either contracts where one party was the producer and the other was the user. Not anymore, because speculation then was limited to 30% or less. Now it's 80, 90%. And as a result, you're seeing a high volatility in future contracts prices. And as there's, they're gambling. And my comment is this. If that's what you're into, you like to gamble, you're a high roller, you like to gamble, do yourself a favor and me a favor. Get on a plane, go to Las Vegas and gamble. And maybe take in a good show, have a good meal. They might even comp you the room. But what the speculators are doing today to this economy is having an adverse impact on the American people. And you see it in gasoline prices. When Barack Obama entered office, the price of a gallon of gasoline in Dallas was approximately $1.85. And I thought $1.85 at the time was high. Now, it's not, it has gotten more than doubled. It's slightly less than doubled today. Not very far behind. But it's not only gasoline that's going up. I was shopping for milk. And I do shop in three grocery stores. Not all at once, but because I was in a rush and it was getting late, I needed a gallon of milk. Today, a gallon of milk in Dallas is $3.19. It is getting very, very close. The price of a gallon of milk equals the price of a gallon of gasoline. Very close, not very far, about 30 cents. And when Barack Obama took office, a gallon of milk was $2 or less. Gee, we just love those economic policies of Barack Obama. They've really worked out. Those stimulus package and Obamacare, they're working wonders. Yeah, right. Tell it to the people that are unemployed. And let me make and link it, because I got 5 minutes to wrap up the last two shows, and link it to this. And you need to get the big picture. Approximately 10 million people today, according to government statistics, actually is slightly less, but those numbers are highly suspect. And they're estimates, folks. They're based on surveys. Can't get in the details, but here's the point. About 10 million are unemployed. That's the official U3 unemployment rate. You have another 6 to 8 million that work part-time for economic reasons. They really want a full-time job, and they also want a better full-time job, but can't find it. Let's use the lower number, though, approximately 6 million. So you're at 16 million people looking for full-time jobs. You have another at least 9 million, and some economists will say more, that are the long-range discouraged worker that have been looking for jobs and can't find them, as well as short-term worker. They've been looking, can't find them. And I would say that's about 9 million. So you're in round numbers, ballpark figure, around 25 million Americans need a full-time job. That should be priority number one of any administration and any Congress. It's the prosperity of the American people. That is what poll after poll, doesn't matter which poll, they'll say it's either the economy or jobs. They're saying the same thing. And they should be focusing. And who is they? It's the president, his administration, and it is Congress. Like a laser beam on this problem. Now, what are they really talking about? What are they talking about? They're talking about raising the minimum wage to $10.10 when less than 3% of the population gets the minimum wage. And what does that mean? It means higher teenage unemployment rates. It means more people will be unemployed. You raise it to $10.10. If Congress were to do that, you're going to increase the number of unemployed people. And it usually hurts the unskilled, the people that are just entering the labor market. Point one. That is one of their concerns. And you hear it over and over and over again from Barack Obama and the Democrats. We need to raise it to 10-10, even though less than 3% of the labor force earns it. The reason they're doing is they're getting pressure from the unions who want the minimum wage to go up so they can increase their wages. That's what's being done. And they're a major contributor to, guess who, the Democratic Party, both in money and in people. Now, what's the second thing in the news? And that's what I've been talking about for the last 2 weeks. Remember, we have about 25 million people looking for a full-time job. They're worried about illegal aliens. Now, under existing law, they should be removed and deported. And there's 30 to 50 million of them. If the federal government, who has responsibility for enforcement of the immigration laws, would do their job, and they're not doing their job, many of those 25 million Americans born and raised, educated here, could find jobs of all ages. Instead, we're more concerned about criminal aliens that have broken into the United States. And they propagate the lie, it's 11 million, it's 11 million, it's 11 million. Ladies and gentlemen, that is an estimate, and it's a bogus estimate. Because if you look at apprehensions, which were running over a million year after year, suddenly have dropped, so have deportations. The only thing that's gone up is the removals, but in total number of deportations is way down. They're not enforcing the law. They're encouraging more and more illegal aliens to come here. Who is that screwing? It is screwing the American worker. It is screwing the 25 million people that are looking for a full-time job. And that is what the American people have said after poll after poll. We have a president and a Congress that are not taking care of business. They're making it actually worse for the American worker. Why do you think 3 to 5 million minimum every year coming in does to the labor force? It explodes it. Is it any wonder that the unemployment rate has been over 6%, now going on over 60 months? Is it any wonder that income inequality has gone up? If your economic policies have a direct impact, and that's what it is, the American people are today competing with 30 to 50 million illegal aliens. And that's not being talked about. You got to connect the dots, and that's why what you're seeing right now is a big push by both the Democratic Party and some in the Republican Party to give a so-called pathway to citizenship, in other words, amnesty or legal status to these illegal aliens. I'll be back June 2nd. We'll be off for 2 weeks for the studio to be rewired. And so we'll be in a top-notch condition. And I wish the students well that have graduated and wish you a good summer. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show on my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD.